Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call this April 3rd, 2017 City Council, fellow City Council workshop to order. And if you would all please rise for a short invocation. If you'd silently pray for this city and for this council to make some wise decisions as we conduct our business tonight. Now join me in the Pledge Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May be seated. This goes without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway. No score updates on the Gonzaga game. We're all recording it at home, most of us. So I don't want any shouts and whoops and anything being disseminated during the meeting, or I'll call you out of order. On our roll call tonight, 1.04, I had Gina had something come up with her son that he was going to be out of town tonight. And also Corey, I believe, is with his son on spring break. So I would entertain a motion to excuse those two members from the council tonight.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Okay, motion made in second. Thank you. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. And we move to item 1.05, our citizen input. That's a segment of the City Council meeting that you have an opportunity to address the City Council with any issue of your choice. Is there anyone here who would like to address the council? Okay, seeing none, we'll move to item two, the approval of our agenda tonight.
Make that motion.
Second.
We have a motion made in second. Thank you. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. And we'll move to item three, our current business, and 3.01 is Tree City USA presentation from Ben Thompson. Ben? Welcome to our fellow, Ben.
Thank you. Can everyone hear me? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for having me here. My office is based in Olympia, so it was a little bit of a drive. But as you may or may not know, you are now one of 90 Tree City USA communities in the state of Washington, out of 281 incorporated municipalities. And our job at the Department of Natural Resources in the Urban and Community Forestry Program, which is the one I work for, we work with cities and towns to help them steward trees better, whether they're trees in city parks or those that line your public streets, because trees are important, especially here in this part of the state. I spent a little time meeting with the folks in George prior to the council meeting here today, and it was a good reminder for me just how difficult it can be to get a tree to be successful in an environment with tough soils and a lot of wind and not a lot of water. So, but I think that's all the more reason to keep the emphasis on maintaining our trees, keeping them watered, keeping them well pruned, and planting more of them. Because there was a time when there was no trees in this community. But certainly on those days in summer, whether it's a picnic in your backyard or a community festival out in the local park, the trees become a lot more appreciated. And so I think that many small towns, especially in Washington, they really struggle to just make ends meet and at the same time preserve those elements of the community that are so necessary and so important, while at the same time trying to layer in new investments in the future of that community. And I'm a little bit biased, given that I'm a forester for the Department of Natural Resources who runs the Tree City program, but I happen to think that investing in your community trees is one of the most cost-effective investments in the future of a community that you can make. And today, we recognize you for earning the Tree City USA Award. You have met four standards that say, this is a community who cares about trees and we want to do the job better. So there's some misconceptions about Tree City that when you receive the award, it means that, you know, it's an honor bestowed upon you for some large accomplishment. And the first year, it does take some work to get it in, and I don't want to undercut that. Your planning staff, or not planning staff, but Amy Hurlbut, here at the city, did a lot of work to get things organized and get the application in. But Tree City USA is really what you make of it. And in every community in Washington, even though there are 90 Tree City communities, it means something a little different in every single one of those communities. So we look forward to working with you as you continue in the program and you search for what it is that Tree City USA means to Othello. Because we certainly don't have prescriptions or blanket ideas that we apply evenly. We try to come to each community, figure out where you're at, and help you move forward from there. So with that, I want to congratulate you on earning the first of what I hope will be many Tree City USA awards. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you very
much. Yep. Going to get a picture.
They're just going to take a picture for their website. So, Ben, on behalf of the City of Othello, I accept this award. Thank you. And I wanted you to know that the council had the opportunity to say yay or nay with regard to this, but we recognize that all throughout America, the cities that seem to me the most beautiful are the ones that have lots of trees. And so we're very excited to be a Tree City USA city, and we look forward to working with you more and more in the future.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for coming. And tonight, on item 3.02, I believe we have Sheena and Kaya here from the Adams County Pet Rescue, and they have some information that they would like to give the council about an event coming up. So, Sheena, Kaya, which one? Both of you?
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thank you. For those of you who may or may not know me, I'm Sheena Sorensen. I'm the doctor and owner at St. Hill's Vet. Work closely with Adams County Pet Rescue to try to make a difference in our pet population here in Othello and Adams County. About a year and a half ago, we worked with an organization over in Portland, and we got 186 cats spayed and neutered in a weekend. Very successful with that. I'm very happy with the results we're seeing. So we are trying to make our own little group here with myself, Dr. Jacobs, and some doctors from Moses Lake that are willing to volunteer some time. So we thought we'd kind of start small and see how successful we are with our own organization here. So we wanted to do what we're calling Homeless Cat Spay and Neuter Day on April 22nd. We're going to limit it to about 30 to 40 cats to make sure that everything goes as planned. And then in the fall, hopefully, actually do another trap neuter release again. This one will be mostly people who can catch their cats, so they'll be strays, but are on the semi-tame side of things. So I assume, we don't really know yet because we haven't put the word out, but most of the people will probably be City of Othello residents. But we're also going to extend it to the rest of Adams County as well.
So are you going to put out cats, Sheena? I mean, cat traps? Are you going to trap any cats?
We're not going to trap any like we did last time until this fall. But we do have traps available if people want to do it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
We've had through, Ken Simmons has some contacts out there of some people who, they're strays. They, you know, don't really belong to anybody, but the people can pick them up and put them in crates, and that's kind of the ones we're going for right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that we don't get that big spring flush of kittens.
If there's, we will help people.
We use my yard as a freeway.
You might ask her for a couple of traps.
Yeah.
And if there's people, elderly or something, somebody else that can't manage to pick up the traps and bring them to us, we can pick them up. Do it for a few people. One thing I wanted to say, we were going to try, or are going to try, and have this at the commercial building and at the fairgrounds, but I made the mistake of calling it the 4-H building. So when I asked if we could do that, they thought I was talking about the food booth. So I've tried to, you know, get that figured out and sorted, and hopefully we'll still be able to provide, or they'll be able to provide the building. If not, we might be looking for a large building, large area, a gym, gymnasium, something like that.
We went, Kaya and myself and my assistant went up to Stevens County, has a group that does it once a month, and they did 200 cats the day we were there. They do it one day a month. It was amazing. It's something that I hope we can strive for. We're not going to be near that kind of group right now, but they do it in a gymnasium at a local school up in Silverdale, and they do a great job, and they have lots of volunteers, and people get involved, and it was really cool to see. They've done over 20,000 cats since they started, so. But even with our last one, would be a year and a half ago in October, Mr. Simmons, who feeds at quite a few stations around town, has seen a great difference in the amount of cats. So just that one was making a difference. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm allowed to throw this in there too, but Officer Miller will be talking with you guys, I think, next time, or maybe submitting some paper for the vaccine clinic as well. That's coming up in June. We were planning on June 10th. I believe City and Pet Rescue splits the cost of that. That's about $430 for City's cost.
Yeah, we budget that.
So.
Okay.
Since I'm here, might as well throw that out, right?
Thank you, Sheena. Do you guys have any comments or questions of the ladies? Appreciate the effort and the impact they're making on the community.
Appreciate you letting us come and mm-hmm. participate.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Bye.
So we'll move to item 3.03, the Rotary Club presentation for Pioneer Park. And with us tonight, we have Ian Eccles and his IT person, Trudy Doolittle.
She's more than just IT, she's everything.
Yeah, she is.
As you mentioned, I'm here for Rotary. Although I have this Avista shirt on, and Sean, I think you missed a golden opportunity when you were talking about beautifying Othello with the trees, and you didn't say something about getting rid of overhead power lines. So.
We sometimes miss a few tricks.
Yeah.
So I just heard Avista say they were going to take all the overhead power lines and bury them. I think I heard him say that.
I just had to throw myself under the bus before somebody else did. Anyway, so this is our Pioneer Park project, and where this came from was that ugly old sign in the corner of 4th and Main that says Othello Rotary Club on top of it, and you know, it's just big white plywood sign that has events posted on it that people sometimes use but nobody really looks at. And so we wanted to get rid of that or change it. And as we talked as a club, we thought, wait a minute, this is an opportunity to do something even more. Let's see if we can get some money from the Rotary District and really beautify Pioneer Park. So I wrote a grant last spring for $50,000 to. And I wrote a paragraph, really. Essentially, it was really short and sweet, and just said, we're going to put a walk path in and put some lights up, and we need $50,000, and they approved it. So it's a matching grant, so Othello Rotary Club would provide $25,000, and Rotary District will provide $25,000. And so since then, we've been meeting with the city staff and the Parks Committee. John and Angel and Gina have been there, and this is what we've kind of come up with as our grand plan. There's a few slides here that we'll go through, but this is just an overall picture that'll include our beautification, Main Street decorative lights. There'll be three of them. I only show two on the slide, but there's three down the block. This concrete walk path through the park. Everything's to scale here, except we missed the well.
I got the wrong picture there.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, you have your well number, what's it, two? Well two here and the sewer manhole here. We've scaled it
on the map, yeah, the print that we had put in here. So we can actually back, Terry could allow a truck to back up to it between two of the signs. Pretty sure it'll fit, but. Anyways, there's going to be seven signs and a 6-foot wide path, three lights, and that's kind of the summary of it. Just a few highlights of these signs. So Trudy did a great job sourcing these signs, and these are just a couple of key points. They're graffiti proof, so we were worried about that, right? Kids spray painting them. So these are graffiti proof signs. They're fire rated, they're rust free hardware, they're powder coated legs. They look kind of like this. So it's going to be, you know, posts in the ground with a kind of a 45 degree angle. So when somebody's walking down this path, they can see these signs. And so here's what we've come up with. We're using the beautification or the branding statements that was laid out by the chamber and by what's his name?
Trip,
yeah. Anyway, and so you guys have seen these words, I'm assuming. We've thrown some pictures on here to represent what we're trying to say on each of these signs. I'm not sure how much, if you each want to go through every one of these signs and read them, or we should have had probably packets for each of you. I apologize for that.
One of the things that doesn't really show up here very well is we're using the beige background with the Othello logo in white, so it will show up a little bit better on final signs. It's more like
yeah, didn't come through on this PowerPoint. But yeah, we're using the colors.
More like that.
Colors that the chamber came up with. So we've got. I'll just scroll through the different signs. So I'll just scroll through them and then go back. So we've got 3, 4. What is that? Oh, and then the last one. So again, bringing the branding statement back. These signs are 3 feet wide by 2 foot tall, and they'll be poured like right into the concrete path. And it just, I think, will give give either tourists or citizens alike, you know, a chance to come, maybe spend a little more time in this beautiful park we have on Main Street that nobody really uses that much, right? I mean, the gazebo, of course, my office is right there. I'll go out there and eat lunch once in a while, but there's very, very few people that use that park. And so we've talked about all kinds of things. We've talked to the mayor about a splash pad maybe in the future, you know. I mean, I guess what Rotary wants to do is make this an ongoing project. So. $50,000 this year, and then this can be like a cleanup event, you know, for the Rotary Club to get together and clean the park up every spring as a club, you know, take a little work off Terry's hands maybe for a day or so, and there's also a plane that we're going to talk about. Yeah, there's been a request from the city to landscape that behind the bathrooms, you know, the bathroom in the southwest corner of the park. The landscaping there is not the most beautiful, so we thought about doing that next year or something. You know, so we'd like to take this on as kind of, you know, our park, but still maintain the name of Pioneer Park. So and then the plane.
Yeah. So. So since I've been here, people have been bugging me about the airplane in the park, because I did fly airplanes for a living, and it does need work, because this plane is on loan from the Air Force, and we have an obligation supposedly to keep it up to some kind of better condition than it's in. This is actually a pretty good picture. It doesn't show all the rust and banged up thing in there. So I've been trying to figure out how to do this. Finally this year, after talking to Ian, I got really serious about tracking out a company. It turns out I had to go through 4 or 5 different companies to find one who would actually give me a cost estimate to come up here and do it. And so I researched it a little bit, researched the company, and they gave me an estimate of about $32,600 or so estimate to bring this airplane back up to really good condition. And that's fixing all the dents, the scrapes, scratches, the rust, and of course repainting and putting the proper stickers, the decals on the airplane to make it look like, almost like it came off the assembly line floor, but almost, and of course not flyable condition because it's got no engine, but it's going to look good. So what they tell me is they're thinking from this airplane to this one.
Okay.
That's actually an example of some of the work they've done is these airplanes with a stick, as we call them, Air Force, but the static displays, and if you look at their bona fides, they have done this kind of work on multiple Air Force bases and in cities. In one base, they did like 16 different airplanes. And so they're sort of not officially certified by the Air Force, but many bases are using this group. Straub's Aircraft Services, they're out of Arizona and Hawaii. Been in business for about 25 years or so. And they gave me a pretty good estimate. And so in talking to Ian and Trudy a little bit, if there's money left over, we could split the cost between the rotary and the city. And so depending on how much that is, I think it's pretty good value for the money. They guarantee, you know, look that way for 3 years, and the guy told me, given the conditions up here, it'd probably still look that way for 10 years, pretty close. I can't guarantee it, but it'd be pretty close to looking that way when they 10 years from now. So they'll put a coating and stuff on it to preserve it. And something we need to do if that airplane looks like crap, and if the road is going to do all this work to make the park look nice, we should probably make our airplane look nice as well. So questions about the airplane part of this.
So are they going to polish the stainless steel, or are they going to paint it?
They're going to look at it and evaluate. I think they're going to paint it, Angel, to make it look like that. There's a whole bunch, on my website, there's a whole bunch of pictures that show different airplanes that are both like that and painted like they came off the Simulac floor. So it's probably what we want once we talk to them and what will last the longest. Any other questions on this? So if the council is amenable to this, we'll proceed forward. I'm not going to sign a contract, obviously, but we're going to wait to hear from Rotary to see how much money's left over. Then I'll come back to council, say how much we'll have to pony up as a city. And at that point, we'll go with these guys. I've talked to Kelly about whether we have to go up a bid. We don't because of the amount plus the service they're doing. So that's the part's covered. Even if we went after a proposal, I've contacted many of the ones that are in the business, and this is the only one that actually showed interest. So, with that, I'll go over to Ian.
I think it's a great idea.
Me too.
Wade, I have done a preliminary budget, and it's looking like we're going to have 12 to 15,000 left out of that 50. So,
how far would be between
18 and 15?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Something like that.
So, yeah, we're definitely, that was part of our initial thought too before even talking to Wade, was to pretty. Or to beautify this, whatever the right word is, spruce up the plane. And so I appreciate Wade taking the time to find that. It took a long time, I know. So yeah, we're definitely willing to participate, and we can do that financially as well with this grant, so.
And Spencer says we have that kind of money in the budget for, I don't know where it's coming from, but.
We have a few different options. We can talk about that once we know what the number is. We can use some late dollars, or we can use some general funding. We have a few different options.
Cool. Are there any questions about our project, or you guys like it or don't like it?
Love it.
Go ahead.
Love it.
Yeah.
I like the project. As far as I'm concerned, the airplane could come down and go somewhere else because it had nothing to do with the growth of the city of Othello. Mm-hmm. The railroad did. Mm-hmm. That's just my own opinion.
Yeah, and our first slide commemorates the railroad, you know, and the old hotel.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we wanted to make sure that was.
And the base was up here for a certain amount of time, but not that long.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's my own opinion.
I think, Larry, for the airplane, I think it just represents the fact that Air Force was part of this community for a while. Even though we didn't fly airplanes out of here, it just shows that we had an Air Force connection, I think.
And that's good. Yeah.
It should have gave us a radar, one of those old radar deals.
That's a
good idea. Ian, I'd like you to communicate to the Rotary Club that we sincerely appreciate what you're doing, you know, and as you look at what is happening here in the city, tonight we've been officially recognized as a Tree City USA. These are the type of things that the Rotary Club is doing that causes interest in a community and its history, and I just think it makes our town that much more intriguing.
Yeah.
and with our annual farmers market that takes place all summer, I think that that'll be a welcome addition, and I think that, you know, for years to come, this is going to be, you know, we may decide to extend it, you know, besides, what you said, you had 8 slides?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we may extend it to 24 slides at some point.
Yeah, to keep going down the other side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, anyway, we thank you very much. We really appreciate it. We appreciate if you would communicate to the Rotary Club our sincere gratitude, and if there's anything else that you need from us, don't hesitate to contact the staff or one of us.
Okay, thank you. I'll share the remarks. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Dan.
Okay, tonight we also have on our agenda a public hearing on the critical areas, and so at 6:56 p.m. I'd like to open the public hearing, and we have a staff presentation from Travis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. For the record, my name is Travis Goddard. I'm the Community Development Director for the City of Othello. And we are here to talk about the Critical Areas Ordinance. If you remember, we have a Community Development Block Grant for the update of our Critical Areas Ordinance and to make some changes through our retooling our code program for code update and modernization. And so this is probably the keynote issue for that grant, and we have had 5 meetings with the Planning Commission who've made recommendations on some code language updates, and their recommendation was that it be brought to you after it gets reviewed by our consultant for both consistency with the state RCW and with the best available science. And so it has gone through a pretty significant process up to this point, and they had recommended that all 5 of these code suggestions be brought to you for review. What you will be doing tonight is essentially taking a quick walk through the process with me, and if you have specific questions about the code, but essentially what I'm looking for from you tonight is not specific approval of the language and adoption of an ordinance. What I'm looking forward is a motion so that I can send on the language to the state agencies, and they will begin a 60-day review process just to make sure that they concur with the consultants that it's the best available science and that it meets the state standards. And then they will give us feedback at the end of that 60 days, the council can then take action and adopt those ordinances or review the recommendations from the state agencies if they have any. So tonight, we can dive as deep into the details as you like, or we can keep it at the general level and let's see how the state goes and make sure that it's consistent with what they want to see. With that, the first thing I wanted to do is I wanted to talk about a couple of the primary purposes of this. As I mentioned, the best available science. The other one is, or part of that review, is the idea that the ordinances have to take a look at 2 main things, and that is the function or the value of the critical area. And kind of the idea of a function is what is the purpose of what we're looking at, and the value means how much is it really worth, the merit, the importance of what we're talking about. So for examples of that is what we're looking at here. These are all function as forms of transportation. The value aspect can be assigned in different ways. One is, what is the dollar value of the function? So if we were talking about transportation, there's different values depending on what you're trying to get out of it. They all will transport kids, but they aren't all equal. And then, of course, the question is, what kind of value are we going to attach to? There's the dollar. There's also speed, fun, transportation for groceries. Skateboard's terrible for that, but the car's good. And so we're dealing with kind of two different issues here, the value of what we're looking at and the function of what we're looking at. And the best available science, the idea behind it is, are our ordinances using the best information available at the time? Is it the most accurate map we have, or is it a 50-year-old map? Are the setbacks based upon what they're proposing to do, or is it just a generic setback? And then, is it the best information available to the site? Right now, if we're using a 50-year-old map, it may be showing something that's no longer there. And this is going to be relevant for the wetlands discussion, and I'll circle around to that and why that's important.
You have several packets, or you have a big packet of information that was before you today, and I wanted to go over that. The second item on that pile is an Excel spreadsheet, and it includes a list of all of the documents that I had to review and look at and compare our ordinances to, and the ordinances that we're going to be looking at adopting. And so it's a list of basically 35 documents or websites, and it's roughly equivalent to about what I have in this binder here in front of me. So essentially, the reason why it takes so much time and effort is I really needed to go through and take a look at what the state was considering the most recent information available. And this I needed to make sure was in the record so that the state agencies know what I'm working off of. So with that being said, let's move to the first topic that we're going to talk about, and this is the frequently flooded areas ordinance. Frequently flooded areas are essentially defined by two major categories. One is floodways, the other is floodplains. So if you think of a I want to say the wadi just on the other side of the coulee, just on the other side of Highway 17, you'll see when you drive by it, you know, the majority of the year there is a water and there's kind of a braided channel that works its way through there. But the entire channel itself is what they call the floodplain. And the difference between the two is think of it this way, in a floodplain, in a flood condition, a floodway is where there is a velocity or a movement of water. That's the floodway. It has a velocity. The floodplain, kind of out on the wings, the water comes up and it drains out, but it doesn't really flood and rush down the sides of the channel. The floodway is where the conveyance occurs, and the floodplain is kind of where it sits and stored until it has a chance to flood out of the floodway. The reason why that's a big difference is because, of course, floodways experience erosion and different kind of hazards, whereas the floodplain isn't that big of a deal. And the reason why that's important is because when you're building structures, you cannot build in a floodway. Theoretically, no matter how you build that structure, there is a chance it's going to be damaged by water coming at a velocity. And in the floodplain, you can build, say, a residence or a structure in the floodplain. The question is, you just have to build it high enough so that there's no significant damage. So if we were talking of residences, you could build a foundation that has, you know, a taller foundation than what you might see out here on 12th and Oak. The foundation doesn't have to be elevated, but there's a difference between the two, because water can come in and out of a foundation if it's in a floodplain, whereas a floodway behaves completely differently. The reason why I wanted to point that out is because the ordinance information that you see in this agenda memo, it really only has one minor code change, and that's essentially a clarification of the purpose statement. Our ordinance really hasn't changed in the last 15 years, since it was adopted, and it's still considered the best available science, simply because as maps get updated, the actual construction standards don't have to change. So this one was a really easy one
to adopt, so it's the one we took on first. And the one thing that I will have to change after tonight is the numbering system. I just adopted some new codes and figured out a system to number it, so that will be the only change that needs to be done compared to what the Planning Commission reviewed. So I have here an example of the floodplain, and the largest floodplain is that coulee on the other side of the Highway 17, south of 26 and north of 26. So if you're familiar, there's a culvert where it comes under Highway 17, works its way on a drainage ditch that's maintained by the irrigation district, and then a culvert under Highway 26 where it comes into the Hampton property back here. So here's the major water supply canal. Here's the drainage canal that separates Palos Verde from Walmart. So this drain line is actually considered a floodway, and that's simply because if we had a big enough storm, water would back up in this field before it makes it through the culvert, and then it would back up in this field before it makes it in that through that culvert that goes under Highway 17. So in an extreme 100-year event, there would be flooding in that field. That's why it's mapped. What's important to notice is that there are no floodplains within the city of Othello, and the urban growth area, literally this is pretty much the only property that would be affected by flooding, even if, you know, Othello continues to grow as we expected over the next 20 years. The only other exception to that is the area where we put in well number 9, that same drainage goes through there, so theoretically there is a flooding potential out in that area, but at this point we don't have to worry too much about that, although in the future we may want to look at if we install a generator out there that we don't want it subject to flooding. But that's essentially it for the frequently flooded area. Do you have any questions? It's going to happen. Sorry.
Council.
No.
Thank you, Travis.
Okay. Yep. So that was easy, low-hanging fruit. The next couple are going to be the same way. The fish and wildlife habitat is the ordinance we'll talk about next. And there are essentially two types of habitat that are identified in and around the city of Othello. The first one is called a point occurrence, meaning that you can point to a specific point in the field or on a map and say, there is a nest in that tree. The other kind of habitat is what they call a polygon or an area. So for example, if you have a hawk hunting area or a feeding range or an elk range, it's a huge area, and it could apply to, in our case, there's a hawk that's identified north of town, and the maps identify, can't see it very well here, actually I think I outlined it, so this entire township and actually the township north of it all the way to Battleground are identified as hawk breeding area. So at some point there is a endangered hawk somewhere between here and Moses Lake, and so it has been identified as potential breeding area for that hawk. And the other example is a point specific. So each one of these little dots on the map can represent where a hawk or an owl was spotted, either breeding or hunting or nesting. And so those are point occurrences, meaning there was a specific observance, whereas the area, the hawk, people know they fly in giant circles of maybe, you know, 10 miles is their hunting range. So that's kind of the difference between a point and an area identified. Any questions about that right now or so far? Okay. So the habitat is another easy example because there are no identified species within the city of Othello except for a burrowing owl and a hawk, and they are both considered breeding areas. And of course, generally, if it was in the middle or if it was in Othello, the coverage would be centered around Othello, but since we're at the very south boundary, it's, you know, could be anywhere from 10 to 15 miles north of the city, but because it hunts down here, it's considered by the state. What's important to understand for the habitat, and that is, we have a mapping source from the State Department of Fish and Wildlife, but these can be anywhere from, you know, 20 years to 10 days old. So you never know, this map is constantly changing. Another great example is, we know west of town, there's significant breeding and rest areas for sandhill cranes. But the city of Othello isn't actually affected by those because none of their habitat is mapped within the city limits. So, I'm sorry, I think I might have skipped the slides. Let me go back and make sure I got this. Okay, so the changes that I had to make to our existing city ordinance, 95% of it didn't have to change, but I added a definition because the city of Othello's ordinance used a definition for habitat that was a little bit strangely worded compared to the state language. So I recommended to the Planning Commission that we just use the state language. That way we're not having to juggle two ordinances and make it more difficult for applicants. And then, of course, I had to renumber and reorganize the code so that it follows the new format that I was going to. So that information and that language is included in your agenda memo. If you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to cover it.
Good, Council.
Good.
All right.
Next.
Okay.
That's it? Or you got one more?
Three more. Sorry.
Three more.
So the next one we'll talk about is wetlands. And wetlands are essentially defined, critical areas are defined by three aspects. There's the soils, the vegetation, and the hydraulic regime, which basically means that a wetland is defined by three things. Are there wetland plants? And there's a giant state and federal list of plants that really have to have wet feet or wet root systems for them to be considered or they would survive and thrive in a wet environment. The wetland soils are essentially soils that have been so inundated with water that they start to behave differently. The chemical makeup and the behavior of those soils change. And so a soil scientist can actually grab a handful of dirt and determine whether or not it's wetland soil because it's been changed due to the amount of water in the soil over long periods. And then, of course, the water regime, and that's essentially, is there water within 12 inches of the surface over a time period during the growing season? That's normally what they look at. So a wetland scientist, when they go out to a site, they'll walk around the site and they'll dig a hole and it's 12 inches deep. And while they're looking at the soils and the plants, they'll wait and see if water starts to collect in the hole. If it doesn't, that's one of the indicators is not there. But they'll look at the soils and the plants. So if they have wetland plants and wetland soils, but there's no water in the hole, they could assume it may just be a dry day, it may just be a dry month. So they could assume the water is there, but those are essentially the three things that the technical experts look for. The code changes that I had to do, essentially our code was pretty good. We had some minor reorganization. I identified the most recent mapping resources and referenced them so that we can use the mapping tools that are available to us online. And then I clarified our process, which basically says if the planner uses our maps and we determine there is a potential for a wetland, that the applicant, if they disagree with us, they can hire a professional consultant to determine whether or not there is a wetland on the site. And the map that I have, this is essentially the wetland map for the urban growth area. The city of Othello actually only has three identified wetlands in it. There is our stormwater facility, which is out by Moon Road on the other side of the highway from Moon Road. There's also a wetland down here in the school district bus barn. They went out and delineated it and determined that it did meet the criteria. But they didn't have to get a wetland permit because they weren't building on it or near it. And there's actually a couple more. This is a little wetland, or it's a drainage next to the railroad tracks. There's also one farther south down near our well house. Now, you'll also notice in your packet, you have a little blue two-page handout from the Department of Ecology. And the reason why I included that is because the Department of Ecology, thanks to input from our friends like Bob Carlson and others, the Department of Ecology recognizes that the presence of irrigation water will make it look like that there are naturally occurring wetlands, but they are not, in fact, wetlands. They are irrigation water that's causing those wetlands to appear. And they've developed that handout, which basically says that if you are engaging in agriculture and irrigation water is inundating the water and creating wetlands, like, for example, down there on Bob's property off of Highway 24, he has cattails growing out in his field or along the ditches. And what this guidance from the Department of Ecology says is because there's ownership issues associated with that water, that it in fact belongs to the district, for us to preserve wetlands so that that water gets preserved may not actually be consistent with the purpose of the irrigation district. So therefore, if Bob were to line his ditch or he were to stop irrigating his crops for a year or two or three, if that wetland dries up and blows away, then it would not be considered regulated under our wetland ordinance. So I think that's important because, as I mentioned before, the best available information we have right now is they think there's a wetland there. But if it's irrigation driven, this map could be entirely wrong, and all the developer would have to do is line his ditch or cease irrigating for a certain amount of time, and if the water goes away and the wetland dries up, it wouldn't be regulated under this ordinance. And that actually would be best available science by making the wetland go away. So I wanted to point that one out because according to this map, there are very, very few maps or mapped wetlands in the city of Othello and the urban growth area. Probably the biggest exceptions are down here underneath the canal in the Rodeo Lake area and the wetland complex. And in the case of our wetland ordinance, if a developer were to annex to the city and they wanted to do a development down in that area, they would have to hire a professional consultant to do the work necessary to determine, is it natural or is it artificial? And if it is natural, do they need a permit? If it is requiring a permit, then they would have to make some design decisions for their wetland. But the ordinance lays out a process for them to go step by step. Do they need a permit? If the answer is no, go ahead. If the answer is yes, then they have to do some more work. And if that work determines, do they need to make design changes or mitigation? And so that's kind of the way the ordinance is structured, so that each point the developer can make a choice. Do I want to avoid or do I want to proceed with the permit? Any questions about this ordinance? Again, this is the last one that we didn't have to do much work on. Okay, so seeing none, we have two ordinances of which our code did not essentially hold water when we compare it to best available science and the state ordinances. And so the two of them are critical aquifer recharge and geological hazard areas. So the one I'll handle first is the critical aquifer recharge areas. And the purpose of this ordinance is groundwater protection, and it looks kind of at two aspects of that: water quality as it goes into the ground, and will it contaminate ground drinking water? And then the other one is the quantity of runoff from contaminated sites, and do they enter the groundwater? The city of Othello is in a little bit of a different situation because we have a very high perched groundwater layer very close to the surface, but our drinking water is taken from the Grand Ron, or sorry, from the Wanapum, and it's the very lowest levels of the Wanapum. So there's a significant difference between the water levels. In some cases, some of the data showed that that the groundwater that we're currently pulling out of some of our wells is over 20,000 years old. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean it takes 20,000 years to get down there. It just means it's been sitting in the ground for 20,000 years. The reason why that's important is because a critical recharge area is considered water that takes less than 10 years to get from the surface to a pipe that withdraws it and sends it to a tap. So we are currently not in danger of withdrawing groundwater that's less than 10 years old. We're way beyond that. But I bring that up to point out that what this ordinance covers is stuff that the city of Othello is not likely to have to deal with in the very near term. But we want to be prepared if we find out that a dry cleaner wants to build a dry cleaning business right next to one of our wells. So what we want to do is we want to make sure that this dry cleaner and his chemicals do not have a direct line to leak into our well that would get down to the 1,000-foot level by virtue of if the well's off and those chemicals are running down the side of that pipe, it could contaminate our entire well because we didn't pay attention to where that product is being introduced into the groundwater. So the main idea behind this is wellhead protection areas, meaning the closer you are to a wellhead, the more likely you are to potentially cause contamination. And the idea is that through this ordinance, we don't want new uses and new businesses introducing hazards to our groundwater system. And sorry, before I move on. So what I did is I looked around and I found a community that's in a very similar situation to us. And I landed on the city of Ellensburg, which has a very close topographical tie and water conditions to the city of Othello. And so I borrowed their ordinance because it was adopted in 2013 and it met the state standards for best available science. So why reinvent the wheel? I just grabbed somebody who was in a very similar situation and used their ordinance. So, for example, this is an example from the city of Vancouver for their wellhead protection areas. And you can see that some of these wells have a very small area of concern, meaning that the soils don't permeate very well, so a dry cleaner would have to be pretty close to some of these wells to present a hazard. On the other hand, this is the Salmon Creek Corridor, and their well is down here at this area. And the reason why it's so big is because it's a very mucky, very permeable soil. So even if you were, and this is about a mile away, if you were to put a dry cleaner in at this location and they were to have a spill, it would take less than 10 years for that spill or for that spill to enter into this well. So it could contaminate this well. And so that's how a professional geologist and a professional hydrologist would determine there's dangers to this well. This one's got a pretty big area. This one's got a funky shape because it's on the side of a hill. This one has three wells in a row. That's why it's got a funky shape, because each one of them has a different infiltration rate on the soils. But this is the kind of stuff that would eventually occur. Now, the benefit for the city of Othello is we get extremely deep water, so the areas that we have to map are pretty minimal. But this ordinance gives us the tool for if we have certain uses come into town that we would know how to treat them to protect our groundwater system before the damage occurs. Now, what's important to know is that we currently have no mapped critical aquifer recharge areas simply because nothing meets that 10-year standard for getting waters to the to our well, where our well is going to suck it up within the next 10 years. So we don't have to worry about mapping simply because we don't have one. Now, the section, I had, like I said, I had to find a new section because it wasn't best available science. and I sought similar jurisdiction, which is the city of Ellensburg. Now, their ordinance has a couple great things that I really liked. First of all, they have a list of exemptions, and some of those exemptions are, is it a single-family residence where they don't store hazardous materials, or that where they're not using large amounts of pesticides, those kind of things. Generally, because our lots are so small, and as long as you're applying your weed and feed according to the directions of the manufacturer, there's not really a large concern for those application methods. So they have a list of things that you can do without having to trigger any additional work. The next thing it does is it lays out some specific use standards. So, for example, if you're storing hazardous materials or you're doing vehicle servicing or you have storage tanks, like a new gas station would have underground storage tanks. So they have to develop things like release prevention or spill prevention plans, cleanup plans, and they're regulated under state regulations. So our ordinance simply says, as long as you're complying with the state regulations and you are not within a mapped wellhead, which we don't have, then you don't necessarily need to do any additional permitting as long as you're compliant with state and federal regulations. So we're not duplicating services that are already provided by the states. So any questions on critical aquifer recharge areas? Okay, so on to the last one. This again is another major section change because our old ordinance didn't meet best available science. So I sought a similar jurisdiction, which is also the Ellensburg, and I organized it to meet our code sections and our formatting. Geological hazards essentially fall into four large categories. There's erosion hazards, landslide hazards, seismic hazards, and other geological events like debris flows, mass wasting, rock falls, or settlement, which is typically open pit mines or underground mines where they start to have collapses over long periods. But we essentially don't experience any of these. There are a couple small exceptions, and that is, we'll go to the maps first. So this is liquefaction, which is essentially during an earthquake, the soils start to act like liquids and they move around and shake. So very low in Othello and kind of north and east and south of town is bedrock. Also out on farther to the west where the potholes are, that's very shallow bedrock. However, there is kind of a layer where we have high to moderate or moderate to high potential for that happening, and that's kind of, it's west of our wastewater facility, but there's kind of a slope, a rising slope there, where some of the deposits from the Missoula flood were deposited at shallow depths. So there are potential areas, but again, that's in Othello's growth area. It's not currently within the city, so we don't have anything to deal with at this point. Second one here is, these are the seismic site classes, the NEHRP, and I don't even remember what those are for, but I believe it's in the staff report. And this is relevant because our building code specifically talks about when the foundation or when the residences need to be tied to the foundations, when do cross bracing get required, and those kind of issues. So these are addressed through our building code, and our building code is C, although again out there on that band west of town it gets a little potential higher danger. So if you were building out at that end of the city in the next 20 years, you might have to do some additional tie down standards if you were building houses or foundations. And then this one is the seismic ground response. This is kind of a weird one because the way the soils here are above the bedrock, for some reason there's this magic number of 100 feet. Within 100 feet of the surface, if you have soils and bedrock combinations within that 100 feet, it has to do with when you're When the ground is shaking during an earthquake, bedrock might reverberate one direction, whereas on the surface, the soils will start to flow sideways as opposed to bouncing up and down. And so it's kind of like jumping on a trampoline. Are you going to be double bounced and go higher, or are you not going to feel it as much? And so, again, we have two danger or potential areas that could be affected by this, and that is this band west of town, west of our wastewater treatment plant, and also that coulee out there on the other side of the highway. The soils could act differently depending on what type of earthquake we get and how strong it is. So these maps are essentially accumulated by the Department of Natural Resources. They're available online. And again, unless we expand city boundaries on the other side of the wastewater treatment plant, this ordinance is very likely to be unlikely to be triggered, simply because the city of Othello and our growth area is on a very firm base. But we needed to adopt a revised ordinance to meet the state standards. Now, the other thing I found that was really interesting, and that is the city of Othello, which is in this area here. We are at the very end of the Saddle Mountain Fault, which is the hill line or the ridge that you see when you head up Highway 24. And then there's the Umtanum Gable Mountain structures and the Frenchman Hills Fault. So whether you realize it or not, we do actually have faults around here. They're just not very active. The most recent one I found was there was a very deep one up near the potholes area. And it was, I think, last active in 2005 and then in the 70s before that. So you can get into these websites and find out exactly when it was last active. But if anybody were to take a look at these websites, they would see that there's a little bit of activity, but not a lot of it. So many of these hazards are mapped by the State Department of Natural Resources, and the building code covers a lot of this: foundation ties and cross bracing. We already implement that even without this ordinance in place, because it's a building standard and it's required by the building code. But we still need to update our critical areas ordinance, and that's essentially why I suggested this adoption, part and parcel of what the city of Ellensburg has. So are there any questions about geological hazards?
Okay,
so this actually was a pretty easy exercise, because the city of Othello is in such a great position. We don't have a lot of the hazards that would threaten a community under normal circumstances. So this was pretty easy exercise. The various drafts went to our consultants, and they produced a document. This is called the Best Available Science Draft document, and they essentially confirmed my conclusions that our ordinances do meet the state standards, and they developed some arguments as to why the state agencies should approve the wording that we have proposed, and the Planning Commission reviewed and approved. And so the reason why I'm here before you tonight is to give you a heads up that we are basically ready for state review, unless you have some major concerns about anything you might have seen in here. What I'm looking for today is just direction that you would like me to send it to the states, polish it, send it to the state to start their 60-day review. And the next step are to combine it into a single document. To finalize this document, there were a couple spelling and grammar errors, but it essentially seemed like it supported the city's position. And so I think we're ready to go to the Department of Commerce and start our 60 days. Once they're done, they will respond and let us know if they have any disagreement or if they think we need to make any substantive changes to the document. And it will come back to you for a final thumbs up or thumbs down if you did not want to adopt it. So you theoretically have another 60 days to look through it. If there's something that concerns you, or if the state agencies want language changes that you're concerned with, you always have another bite at the apple and the opportunity to review their input, and we can do some more analysis, figure out whether we're comfortable with their requested changes. But I'm pretty confident that we won't have to worry about that. This document seems pretty solid, and the consultant agrees with us, so this should be a pretty easy process to get adopted. And we should buy the city 5 to 7 more years of even having to pull this out and take a look at it again. So.
Thank you, Travis.
Yep.
All right. At this time, I'd like to open our public comment and testimony regarding this ordinance. Is there anyone here present who would like to speak in support of our ordinance? Is there anyone here who is neutral to this ordinance and would like to address the council? Hearing none, then, is there anybody in opposition to this ordinance and would like to address the council? Okay, hearing none, I'm going to close the public testimony portion of this meeting and the public hearing at 7:37 p.m. And council, do you want to take the recommendations of Travis, our community development director, and ask him to do these 5 steps that, or implement the process of these 5 steps towards final adoption of the ordinance?
I would like to do that.
Would you like to?
Yes.
Thank you, Larry. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion made and second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, gentlemen. And thank you, Travis. It was excellent work bringing us to that point. However, you're not finished. So we'll move to item 3.05, Sagestone, is that 8, developers agreement?
Thank you. So the developer and their consultants are here tonight. We are having a hearing for Sagestone 8, phases 1, 2, and 3 tomorrow at 3 o'clock here in this room. And we believe that we have pretty much all of the issues ironed out. We met with the Water, Sewer, and Road Committee, or the Street Committee, last week, and we presented them with a preliminary budget to go over. But I wanted to bring you up to speed and make sure that the applicant had the opportunity to at least hear from the council and get some assurances that staff's commitments are supported by the council. So if you're just a quick refresher, so 14th Avenue Project, CBHA, and Sagestone is the property kind of mid-block between 7th and 14th. What they are proposing is a subdivision in 3 phases for, I believe it's 94, 96 units. The properties that we're talking about are the Garza's adjacent to 7th Avenue, it's Garza Enterprises LLC, and the Michaels property, which is adjacent to 14th Avenue, which is DEM Enterprises, and then Olson Homes property. This is the subject property here. And if you remember this before, I've brought it to you a couple times to make sure you're aware of what we're doing. And we're working on a Columbia Street alignment, and we worked with the applicant and the neighboring properties to secure right-of-ways, 80-foot right-of-way on the Michael property and an 80-foot right-of-way on the Garza property. And the applicant will be dedicating an 80-foot right-of-way as part of their proposal. But we ran into some issues that required some coordination, and specifically, there's going to be some water main installed across the Garza property, and Mr. Olson will be installing that water line. And part of the agreement with the Garzas in return for that right-of-way dedication is that they would repay Mr. Olson with the latecomers agreement up to potentially $30,000. And that was part of the agreement that they agreed to for dedication of the right-of-way. And the Michaels We had talked to them about installing water across their property to collect the 14th so that it would be looped. And the Michaels also agreed that they would accept a latecomers agreement on that water main simply because there's some economies to getting it installed all at the same time. So the water main for Michaels will be latecomers, and the water main for the Garzas will be a latecomers, only that will be to Mr. Olson, not the city. So he wanted to get some verbal agreement that the council understood that that would be a latecomers. Under our city code, latecomers are optional. So he, of course, wants some assurance that the city council believes it's fair for him to get that reimbursement. So even though we don't have a dollar figure, if we don't think it's fair that the Garzas pay for their water main, he wants to know that ahead of time. The other thing that...
Can I stop you right there?
Sure.
So this latecomers that they're asking for would just be to the...
Garzas.
Would be for the Garzas, but what about over at the Michaels?
So the Michaels latecomers will be to the city. So the
okay,
city,
so the city is paying for that portion of it.
Yes.
And the Garzas are not paying for their portion of
yes.
it.
Yes. So okay. Theoretically, the developer is not as worried about the city getting its money back. He's more worried about wanting some commitment that the city will make sure that he gets his money back.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Got it.
Okay. So the developer is essentially seeking five reassurances, as far as I can tell from our notes, and that is he wants to ensure that the council is receptive to the commitment to reimburse him for his work on the Garza's property. Also, that the council understands and has reviewed the preliminary budgets, and the city recognizes that we will be responsible for the upsizing and the deepening and some various utility costs, including irrigation lines, because we want our irrigation utility installed in their subdivision. So there are some costs associated with that. And I'll let John maybe weigh in at this point, or John or Mark, because they were both at this meeting.
Yeah, I think the commitment in the first dot is that we have actually agreed to go ahead and cost the irrigation line and the upsizing of the water line that's required to connect all of this together, so that the contractor doesn't have to come out of his own pocket for that. And the latecomer fees would, that because he's going to cost out the water and everything going through the Garza's property, he's entitled to that because that's going to be his expense, where we're going to pay for the cost going to the east through the Michaels property. That way the whole thing's connected. The value, the whole thing is that it makes all that ground valuable, every bit of it, because it's all one connected piece now. And we're basically working with a contractor to get what we want as a city.
Good.
Sharing costs.
Do you have any comment, Mark?
And
not sure.
Just yeah. And the deepening of it. The upsizing and the deepening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. The next issue that the staff and the developer had agreed upon, and that is a pilot project or an experiment. Currently, our code says that the inspection costs are at the developer's at a rate that is reimbursable to the developer. So the more inspections that are done, the more the developer has to pay. And the developer was looking for some kind of predictability in how much to budget for his inspections. And the Moses Lake uses a 2.5%, and then they have a table that talks about re-inspections and those kind of things, or over time, if it has to be inspected like in the evening because they're working late, that those would not be necessarily considered part of the 2.5%. And the staff work through that issue, and we believe that it makes sense for us to give this a try, so that if it works successfully, that we could continue maybe to implement that for other projects going forward, and it provides a little more predictability. So they would like that in the developer's agreement, that they have that security before they apply for the subdivision, and of course, start on the investment in the utilities, so that they know at the back end what those inspection costs will be. The other thing they're asking for is, under the Othello Municipal Code, for some reason our ordinance says that when you get a subdivision approved, you have 2 years to apply for a site plan, a plat, or a building permit, and you can extend that 2 years for 1 year. Prior to 2008, the state code actually said, from the day you get an approval, you have up to 5 years to get everything done, and then you can record your plat. And in 2008, what happened is you had this hot housing market and all of these approved subdivisions, and then the market dropped off. So the state legislature actually started saying, okay, that 5 years, you're going to need more time until the market picks up, so we'll give you 7 years. Then we'll give you 8 years, and I think it's now up to 10 years. The applicant was looking at our ordinance, and my draft staff report raised an issue that they were a little concerned with, and that is 2 years to do all three phases was a little scary. Even adding an extra year is a little scary, so they requested that we maybe adopt the state standard, which says that they can take up to 5 years for the first plat, and then after that first phase is done, they have 2 years to do the next phase and 2 years to the next phase. So it essentially extends their timeline from 3 years maximum to 9 years maximum.
So we'd have to change the ordinance in order to do that?
No. From a developer's agreement, what it means is, in this case, we agree to the circumstances where, in this case, they would like additional time.
I think it's mutually in a developer's agreement. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
So the plat timeline that I recommended in the staff report was 5 years and then 2 years for each phase after that. So, and then the last thing is they've proposed an alternative design for Columbia, and I know that they have some plans for that, but just in a nutshell, the issues that we're dealing with, and that is the Garza property is zoned commercial and the Michaels property is zoned commercial. So at either ends, we have 7th and 14th Avenue with commercial property, but they're connected by this stretch that was commercial, but it's since been zoned residential. So the question is, does a full 60-foot street like what we have on Scutney, is it really what we want going through this residential stretch? And given the fact that we have Scutney connecting 1st and 14th, we also have Gemstone, which collects 7th and 14th, and now we will have Columbia, which will connect 7th and 14th. We're starting to establish this network where you have multiple paths to get through. So does it make sense for us to have a skinnier road in that? So it'll traffic down. It should theoretically make things safer. They've agreed to a couple of changes, and that is, in return for smaller lane widths, that they would have a curb and gutter with a planting strip behind it, and then a separated sidewalk. So theoretically, what we'll have is these slower speeds, slower streets. We'll have on-street parking initially. If the road trips pick up in the future and we get higher volumes, the next thing we would do is we would eliminate on-street parking, and we would have lanes with a center turn lane in case people were turning in or out of the commercial developments. But it also allows us to put utilities and irrigation outside of the roadbed, so that it should reduce the cost for doing maintenance in the future, plus the overall reduced plowing, reduced stormwater impacts of eliminating essentially 16 feet of pavement that isn't necessarily required for the amount of trips that this development will be handling at this point.
Didn't we discuss that during the through the residential area, it can remain the same, but at the commercial areas, you'd eliminate the parking, which you wouldn't need along the street, because most of the commercial areas would have a parking lot for the patrons to park in.
So you're talking about a 44-foot street going from 7th all the way to 14th?
Well, and Dell has some examples here, but no, we would be talking about just strictly on the Olson portion, the residential portion. So we still have the full width right-of-way all the way through the corridor, but say, for example, at the Michaels property, they could still put in a turn lane in and out. So if there was a development, say we get a Starbucks at this location, people will still be able to come in and have a left turn lane into Starbucks. And when you come out of Starbucks, you'll be able to take a right, go down to the highway, or take a left and go left. So we'll have theoretically 5 lanes at the intersection of 14th. But when you get into the residential neighborhood, it immediately funnels into 2 lanes with parking, and it should slow people down and make it a little safer through that neighborhood. And
then widen again at the Garza's?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I think I get it.
And I think he has some examples of what that street road might look like, or that road might look and function like. So when we're done here, he should be able to walk you through that.
Travis, before you move on, one thing I just noticed in the agreement that we had talked about and agreed upon was on the 2.5% inspection. Mm-hmm. There'll be an additional charge if we inspect, disposing correct, we go back to re-inspect, and it's not done right, then that charge will be added onto the 2.5%. That's what we agreed upon that. So just to clarify that. Okay. Just go ahead again.
So when they're done with their presentation, I'd like the opportunity to come back and just clarify some last things and what we're looking for tonight.
Okay.
My name is Del Green. I work for Columbia Northwest Engineering, and I represent Pete Olson.
Sure.
So as Travis has done so well in presenting, this is the roadway cross-section that was agreed upon in our last meeting, just to show you exactly how it would lay out. And you can see how the traffic would be funneled in. I realized I needed a plan view with the proposals at the either end, and I could have come up with that. But so as you can see there, with this road section, we still have the 80-foot right-of-way. You still have the ability down the road, if traffic were ever to increase, to be able to widen the road, if that likelihood ever occurred. And you also have the 5-foot planters, 5-foot sidewalks, and about 6.5 feet worth of room on the back side of the sidewalk for utilities and other improvements. According to our last discussions, they were looking at putting in the utility or the irrigation utilities inside that zone, which would be after the water meters, and it relieves some of the requirements of that the State Department of Health has is when you're working behind the water meters. So as you see, the coming from the Garza's property down here on this end, you'll be coming up through a big S-turf curve that you see in here. It's a little more exaggerated as you see on the board here. You know, we come up a little higher and then back down and in. Along those routes, there's going to be, it's a little tight. And due to the narrowing width, the city's requested that we put in street signs there and limit on-street parking in the short term as well. And so we're working towards that in the revised designs. There'll be street signs along that short area of that S-curve that has no parking signs in those areas. So that facilitates storm, or snow removal, and also enhances site distances for traffic. And any other points?
Do you have any comments on the, if you want to back up maybe to the list of bullet points, do you have any comments on what you're trying to get at?
Sorry. That's right. Yeah. So I don't think, I think the late comment agreement for Pete Olson's work was adequately covered. The council comments or the utility work that we're talking about, the reimbursement for the portions of the utility work required by the city that are not required by the codes for the Pete Olson project, also included the deepening and oversizing of the stormwater mains and also the sewer mains. Those pieces weren't directly discussed, and we're requesting for those overages to be handled. The 2.5% inspection fees were covered. There's a little bit of pushback on our end relative to the re-inspection fees. From the developer's perspective, we're in everybody involved, the contractor and the developer, we're in the game to get it done and get it done quick because it costs us money. We're a little leery that in the inspections, if there's a lot of re-inspections and people can possibly, just should I say, over-inspect, there'd be too particular, that there's a cost sharing on both sides. On the developer side, he's paying in terms of iron on the ground and human effort to try to get this done. On the city's perspective, if there are some re-inspections that are required, that the city would actually be feeling a little bit of the pain on its side. We respectfully request that thought to be taken into account when we're discussing, you know, the possibility of re-inspections. Our contractor payer.
So let me just.
I'm sorry.
So if it's on a system that we're agreeing to pay for or to cost share in, such as the increased size of the water line on the Michael's property and everything going that direction, if there's an inspection fee or something like that, we're going to be paying it anyway, right?
Well, we'd agreed to before this was written up in more than one meeting was that a flat 2.5% inspection fee, except if, let's say, there was a so for some reason there was a pipe or meter or something that was set wrong or was wrong, come out, oh, that's not correct. And then they said, okay, we fix it. They come out and they said, we fixed it. We come back out there and it's not fixed to city standards. Then at that point, and that point only, is the reinspection fee charged, not for the first time inspection, but for the reinspection, not even for the reinspection, only if we had to come back a third time, basically. And so that's what we agreed to, and I'm not sure why this is coming up now, but we did agree to that. And so to answer your question, John, yeah, we're inspecting stuff that the city eventually will take over.
No, what I'm saying is the pipes and everything going east of Olson's through Dwayne Michaels or the DDM property, that's the city. We're doing that.
No. What this?
We're doing it in conjunction with him, but we're paying the cost.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. So if we have inspections on that material that we're laying and putting in there, that's ours.
That's a city.
That's ours. We own. That's ours.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So you don't. So as a developer, you don't have to worry about that. The section going west along Garza's place, you know. I mean, you're right. We want to do it right the first time and get it right, you know, while we're doing all this, because it's going to cost all of us.
Definitely.
So preliminary, going over the what the design is and how we're going to do it, I don't think that you're digging through virgin ground. There shouldn't be anything in there that's going to cause any elevation problems, whether you're going to have to do, you know, different things. But there shouldn't be a need to go back and do re-inspections and stuff if we're doing it right and we're following the prints and the everything.
That's correct. And Wade brought up another point. The term re-inspection wasn't defined to us the same way that he just defined it there. If there's a single point where, you know, when you say re-inspection, that's the first time you have to come back. So if there's a correction and then we have the ability to make that correction underneath the same, I think that's completely acceptable.
So do you call the city to have a section of what you've built inspected? They come out and inspect it? Or does the city work with you, with their engineer, to make sure that you're laying it properly so that you don't have to change it?
The vision that we are looking towards for this agreement, this 2.5% permit fee agreement, is for us to work with the city and to be able to keep the city in close loop of the construction activities. So the city can make inspections at any time they see fit during that construction period. That should be adequate to keep the contractor on his toes, to keep him on his best behavior. Also, as you saw in the proposal last at the Utilities Committee, there's a significant amount of effort put into compaction testing along with per the agreements that we've discussed with the city so far. So there's going to be professional measurements of a lot of the work that's never been done in the past. Keeping in mind, in to my recollection, in the work done in the past on all the projects with Pete Olson, that we haven't ever had a settlement issue. So going forward, even with this 2.5%, there's going to be a significant level of
cost.
Well, there's a significant level of cost, but there's also a significant increase in visibility into the construction practices that are going into the ground. Now, the thoughts in the Garza property, yeah, there's some thoughts there that we don't know exactly what we're going to run into in some of those areas. The elevation change of the west end of Pete Olson's property has some different geological method or structures in it. That's why that ridge line's there, and I believe in the past they've ran into caliche and some different other structures, underground structures, geologic structures that can cause us challenges. Not to mention the perched groundwater table, which some other things that there are cost sharing going along. So in the budgets going forward that will be proposed, you've seen preliminary in the future ones, you'll see that structure of the cost sharing and how we'll be working together to try to get through these challenges to be able to deliver the utilities all the way to 14th in a manner that prepares Othello for growth in that area and to the east. So with that, if we can probably take the draft that we have there and make some modifications to describe that pattern of perpetual need for re-inspection and get that drafted in there so it's clear. It's our goal with Olson Homes and going forward that we're able to develop a pattern that we'll be able to use going forward that causes for efficient development here in Othello City. We're really trying to pattern things in such a way that there's no reason for disagreement and that we'll be able to go through smoothly and efficiently. I think I covered all the pieces and parts that are on the list.
Is there a piece that you can miss?
Council, do you have any questions?
So for the re-inspection, say if you go out there for the third time, John Mark, have we set up a rate for that, and what's the rate going to be? Is it going to be a set fee to go out there at time?
It's, no, and like Dale said, make sure we are clear on what we're talking about, re-inspection.
Re-inspection the third time.
The third time, okay. We haven't set that in stone, but it's basically, you know, time of our staff and time of whoever's doing it, is what it's going to be, so, for the most part.
Okay, we're not going to be using Varela then for that, we're going to do it.
We're going to use.
On our own?
We're going to use a combination of our staff and Varela. Varela will be out here working on First Avenue, okay? Anyway, doing inspections and stuff there, so, and talking to Kurt, and Varela, they feel they can help our staff with some of the inspections.
Well, and we'll keep the cost down for both of us.
That's correct.
For ourselves and for them, you know, if we could take pictures of things and then meet with Varela, because we're going to be meeting with Varela anyway.
Well, our staff and Varela figure it out.
Yeah.
Okay? You keep the cost down.
Because those guys can ching you really fast. There's one other thing I wanted to point out to the council so that you know. The reason for the upsizing, what we're going to do is we're going to correct the situation on 14th with stormwater that we will get all the way down through off of this property and property above to the east of 14th. So we're preparing for the eventuality of development east of this 14th Avenue with that increased stormwater capacity.
And to me, I'm not trying, and to include the sanitary sewer as well from CBHA already. And that's what, if you guys remember a while back, we talked about doing this. So CBHA could then jump into that and go straight across.
So this is helping to correct and actually increase development to the east.
Yeah. So there will be latecomers fee to east of 14th then.
And the things we talked about in our meeting too is, you know, when we get people signed up and we get people using our water and we get people using our sewer, we make money off of our water and sewer, you know. So it's not just a fee to hook up to it and help pay back the capital. They're actually using the system that we've built and they're paying us, you know, for that. And we make money off the water and sewer right now.
That's our responsibility.
Yep.
Okay. Any further questions? Comments? All right.
Thank you.
It sounds like we still have an accord. All right. Travis, did you want to conclude?
Yeah. At this point, I would simply ask, Pete, are you definitely comfortable with what you've heard for the hearing tomorrow? Because one of the things I think we're going to need to do is we're going to need to go back and go through this ordinance and or go through this agreement. Just make sure we're on the right page. There's a few tweak things. The question of, like, this agreement is good for 10 years, but if the subdivision is done in 5 years, I don't know that we necessarily need to have differing timelines. And so there's a little bit of language for us to clean up. And I think we can...
No,
I don't think so. So we just want to make sure that this is tightened down, and this will have to come back to you as a city council. So after we iron out some of these things, I just wanted to make sure that when we go to the hearings examiner tomorrow, that we have an agreement in principle. And you will have an opportunity, of course, to determine whether or not the latecomers agreement and what rates those are set, those have to come before you individually and be adopted as part of or as part of an ordinance. And so you will have the opportunities to get to those. We just can't do it at tonight's meeting, so that we would have those documents prepared for the hearings examiner tomorrow. But I wanted to make sure that the examiner understands that the applicant has come before the council. The council agrees upon these issues on principle. Of course, we can't write down specific, we, the city, shall pay X amount of dollars, because if construction goes quickly and smoothly, those dollars will be less. But if things drag on and it takes the applicant, say, years to do phase two and phase three, that the city's not locked into a specific dollar amount, we recognize that some of those are going to be moving targets, and hopefully tomorrow at the hearings examiner, the applicant will be confident that they can proceed and make those investments, knowing that the city council is backing up staff's negotiations, and that you are comfortable with where we are going for tomorrow. Okay?
Council, you're comfortable?
Yep.
With what we just discussed, and Travis, and with the engineer? Okay. Good. All right. Thank you very much. We'll now move to item 3.06, Adams County Marijuana Moratorium.
So I'm sorry to add this at the last moment. I added it this morning. The Adams County has adopted a moratorium, and they recently renewed it, and they would like to create a marijuana ordinance like we had, we went through earlier. And they essentially are asking for the council's input as to whether or not we would like any restrictions in Adams County's jurisdiction in and around the city of Othello. So we currently have a prohibition ban on the retail, the processing, and the production of marijuana within the city limits. And they are looking at some very similar language. They would just like to know if we would like to have any comment or influence over the area around the city of Othello. Currently, the moratorium is processing, retail, and production is prohibited within 2 miles of the city limits. And so that would seem to cover the majority of our urban growth area. My suggestion might be that we consider requesting 2 miles and the urban growth area, whichever is larger, because there might be some corner down there by the fairgrounds at Highway 17, which technically is closer than 2 miles, but still within our growth area. But I just wanted to get your input before I respond.
Yeah, we're already giving up any revenue that would be associated with the taxation of marijuana by doing what we're doing. The 2 miles is adequate for me. It is an acceptable state, you know, law in the state of Washington, and there are people that are wanting to generate, you know, income from it. I think that 2 miles is good, in my opinion.
I'd like to stay the same as what we've got now, the 2 miles. And if there was a question about around the fairgrounds and that area there, we might throw that in also, so that we don't go for that stuff here in Othello.
If we add our growth area, that helps out a bit, because if you just do the 2 miles, they can go right there at the edge of that 2 miles, but it could be in our growth area, and then
city grows up to that
city point. City grows up to that point, then they, yeah, they're already there, so they can,
yeah,
you know, but, that's where they can move.
You know, by that time, who knows what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah, 2 miles.
But, no, guys, look, all I'm saying is that I'm looking at other places within the state of Washington, and where this stuff does exist, and it does exist right in the cities. I mean, Moses Lake and Ellensburg, you know, those areas, which are, you know, they're not having problems associated with it, you know, like everybody would expect. I know that we were a community that voted 60-some percent against 502, but if you go out Cunningham Road, we have the largest in the state of Washington grower processor operation on Cunningham Road. There's 3 tier 3 licenses within 7 miles of the city of Othello.
So what are you saying?
I don't know. What I'm saying is that, you know, we've put up a very strong opposition to having it in the city. I agree with that. I don't want it in the city. And I'm in agreement with that, but to extend the distance any farther than 2 miles from the city seems like we're getting really pushy. We're overstepping our bounds as a legislative body for the city of Othello to go any farther than that. That's all I'm saying, in my opinion.
This is for 2 years?
No, this is indefinite.
It would be an accepted ordinance by the county for however long it went without being challenged.
It'll affect, I mean, it's going to be a long time from now, you know, 2 miles of growth is, I mean, what's Othello, 1 mile?
If you're looking at Highway 24, Bench Road is 1 mile from the city limits. So you're talking another mile down 24 before somebody could put a store in or put in a processing operation. So it's quite a distance.
I think we'll get it 2 miles. Yeah, 2 miles.
Let's prepare something, as long as we have a consensus, to respond to their request for some kind of a position from the city council, that we would request in their ordinance that they adopt a 2 mile from the city limits, city boundaries.
Yeah. Well, in their letter that it was addressed to the city, it states that that's what they want to do, is go to 2 miles. So all we have to say is we accept what their proposal is and leave it at that.
Okay. We need to respond via letter, so we'll say that. Okay. We good? All right. Moving to item 4. Is there any committee reports to come before the council? Is there any unfinished business on item 5?
Sorry.
I don't know if this is unfinished business or if it's new business, but I was up at the skate park yesterday, and I was wondering, when are the bricks going to be done? When's the entry to the skate park?
I'll let Terry expand on that, but we had to wait on the ground to get more solid.
But
and
it is planned for this year?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's okay. Just so you know, we're that's behind, all. So it'll be a little later than we wanted to this year, but it will be this summer.
Now, this last year was probably one of the worst years I've ever seen in the 30 years I've lived here, that we had frost here. For some reason, it was just one of the worst that you could imagine. And I looked at those cracks, and they don't look like they've grown any.
Sure. So I expect them to
grow this year.
Yeah.
They come back because there were some that were pretty big.
Really?
Yes. And then, you know, I've seen in my development that even on the new asphalt, we had like, I don't know, probably an eighth of an inch, and it's like a hairline crack now. I can barely notice
okay.
it.
Okay. So anyway, I just wanted you to know.
I haven't made it up there yet.
Yeah. Is there any kind of an epoxy that we could lay down on that
Terry and I talked about this last week. There is a product out there, but you got to be careful to make sure that the crack's big enough for it to accept it, so it doesn't do more damage.
They don't look like they're big enough.
They're not. I looked at them, too. You'd be hard-pressed to put anything in there.
Yeah, I was just thinking of some sort of an overlay that you could do.
And talking to boarders, the people, the skateboarders out there, the way they are now, they just shouldn't leave them alone as opposed to trying to put something in there because they don't want that bump. But we'll monitor them, you know, as the years go by to make sure that there's, if we need to put that in there, we'll get the product to do it.
Kids are using it.
Okay. Any other unfinished business? move to item six, new business. Just a reminder that your Public Disclosure Commission annual report's deadline is April 15th. Also a reminder that the official candidate filing week is May 15th through 19th. And briefly, I went to Ritzville last week to a meeting of the Board of County Commissioners. The Adams County Commissioners, with the retirement of Gary Brewer, are, if they haven't voted today, they intend to vote soon to redistrict it into, we've for 40 some years have had a Ritzville District Court District and a Othello District Court District. And so now the Board of County Commissioners are looking at making it just one large district. And they've got several reasons why they want to do that. Number one, Gary Brewer is the only attorney currently living in Othello who had run for that wanted that position. The other two attorneys, Stephen Felice and Steve Sackman, have no interest in serving as the Othello District Court Judge. So what it appears is that their intention is to appoint the current deputy prosecutor, Carolyn Benzel from Ritzville, as the Othello District Court Judge to serve out the remainder of Gary Brewer's term, which is 18 months. And there is concern from myself, from our police chief, about how that those two actions are going to turn out. And so the other thing that may take place then is that the Board of County Commissioners may decide that then after that 18-month period, they're no longer going to have two half-time judges. They're just going to go to one district court judge, and that district court judge will be the judge for both the Ritzville court and the Othello court. So part of the, you know, when what is particularly troubling is that when I was at that meeting, the mayor of Ritzville, myself, the mayor of Othello, our police chief, citizens from Ritzville, and both of the district court judges and the superior court judges recommended that they not take this action. And they all I can say is that I think that their course of action that they were planning to take was already set. And so here you had the judges who basically are the ones who have run the court system for, you know, that's their purpose, and they were recommending against it. They felt like Othello is the one who's going to get the short shrift, because you could have a judge who doesn't live in your community, is not a part of this community, who could be seated, you know, here. So you're going to have somebody from another end of the county now for the next 18 months. And then the other thing is that if they change it to one district, that means they're going to, that people from Othello could end up having to serve in district court in Ritzville, and Ritzville people might have to come and serve on jury trials in Othello District Court, where they drive up, and I don't know if any of you guys have ever had to sit in it. You go in and you sit there for maybe 10 minutes, and then the prosecutor and the defendant and his attorney settle the case, and then they come out and say, okay, we don't need you, and now you got your 10 bucks and you got to drive back to Ritzville. Or if you're from Othello, you get the same thing happens, and then you get a turnaround drive back to Othello. So there were some issues, and I think, and Larry McCourty was a part of some meetings, and maybe you could add to that.
Well, the chief of police asked if I would come in and visit with him, and I did. And we sat, and he had it all laid out really, really well. On, they had a meeting before this last one, I think it was last Monday, and they all agreed to go with the two systems you know, here and Ritzville. And he asked me if I knew any county commissioners, and I said, yeah, I know them all. Could you get one of them to come in and visit with myself and the chief? And I said, sure. So I went out and I knocked on the door of Roger out there, and I asked Roger, I said, would you come in and meet with the chief and I? Well, I got this going, I got the birds and all. I said, how about tomorrow? What time are you going to do it tomorrow? He said, how about 2 o'clock? I said, okay, I'll meet you there. So we sat there and had a good visit on what the chief had in mind. We went to prosecutor number one, and it looked to me like, and Roger sat there and agreed to everything we talked about until they went up with, you and the chief went up there, and everything that we talked about in that back room was thrown out the window. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is, our county commissioners, out of the three, two of them live in Othello, and you swear to God that they live in Ritzville. Mm-hmm. They're trying to take over everything from there and leave us with nothing, the way it looks like to me. Now, I would like to write or have Wade write a letter on our council is not happy with the decision that they come up with, whether it does any good or not. And then each council person, if you're for it, sign it. If you're not for it, you don't have to sign it. But I think we definitely got to make a stand, guys, that, hey, we want both sides. We want to be able to hold court right here in our own community. We don't have to drive all the way to Ritzville. And that's kind of where I feel about it.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of what, a lot of times you do things for political reasons, okay? We do need to make a stand for a political purpose, and that political purpose is to go on the public record that we oppose that decision that they're making. If they haven't made the decision, well, then certainly they know our opinions. And if they decide to go against their own city council, and then obviously we want that on public record because
sure, come election time, that's exactly going to be a consideration.
That's right.
So we need it to be known that they have done this to us. Yeah. I mean, right now we're faced with a situation where we don't even deal out, you know, discipline or penalty anyway. You know, most of the cases that go through there, they're not even being prosecuted, you know, to the fullest extent, and it's like a revolving door. You know, in order for our community to be, you know, to be lawless, you know, the way it is, the judicial system's allowing it. You know, they're not dealing out any penalty for what's happening, mm-hmm. as it is.
In the Ritzville court, a lot of their cases are speeding tickets.
Yeah.
And you know what them speeding tickets are compared to ours? Ours don't get paid. I mean, we've got people that are not going to pay because they ain't got no money. I mean, give them an $800 deal. Hell, they ain't going to pay it. Up in Ritzville, all their speeding tickets are I-90. Yep. Now, if you were driving the I-90 going someplace and they give you a $150 ticket, you're not going to want to stay and go to court. I'm going to pay this and get out of here. That's how they get their money.
And it's a lot.
You betcha.
They make more money than we do, far more. Even though we have the population here, it isn't a function of the population, their court. It's a function of the traffic.
We need a court system here.
Yes.
That's prosecuting, you know, the property crimes and, you know, the things that affect this community. And they need to be dealt with strictly.
Right down here in our own deal.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, somebody steals from somebody else, they need to be dealt with, you know, and prosecuted to the fullest.
So, if we have a consensus, I'll instruct staff to prepare a letter, and then you'll have an opportunity to sign it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Next couple of days.
Yeah.
Next few days, yeah.
Then our next item on the agenda is executive session to discuss personnel, and I'd like to have Debbie remain, and we may be taking action after that personnel for that session. So right now I'd like to call that executive session at 8:31 p.m. and it could go 15 minutes.
We'll shoot for 15.
Okay, we'll shoot for 15 minutes. If we can do it sooner, we will.
We have the record.
The council's back in session at 8:48 p.m. The city and staff and now the council in executive session has discussed the impending retirement of Debbie Kuderna as the Othello City Clerk. And after discussions and meetings by the staff and myself, and now this discussion with the council, the mayor has the authority to appoint a new city clerk, but that is subject to the approval of the majority of the city council. And I would like to appoint Becky or Rebecca Ozuna as the next City of Othello clerk, and that would be effective July 1st. And I need, I would entertain a motion from the council to do so.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried unanimous. Thank you. And having no further business to come before the council tonight, I'd like to adjourn tonight's meeting at 8:49 p.m.